Hi, I'm Lisa, and my heart right now is devoted to helping teachers turn their classrooms into student-centered spaces. One of the fabulous reasons for doing that, one of the most surprising but fulfilling outcomes for me, has been nurturing student relationships. And in that context, I want to tell you today about some strategies and tools you can use to really get to know your students. So stay tuned. You're looking to change things up in your classroom. You'd like to see more student participation and interest, or you really need a better way to tap into each student's individual abilities. Maybe you're happy with everything in your classroom and you're just that teacher who will stop at nothing to provide the very best opportunities for your students, so you're always open to hear more good news. Well, let me personally welcome you to the Student-Centered Science Teacher Podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Carosis. I'm a secondary science teacher with 11 years experience teaching at-risk students in a distance learning cyber model. And yet, I've realized success in my efforts to plan for and execute student-centered learning. See, I believe that a science teacher's job goes beyond transferring specific content knowledge. Rather, I believe our duty is to prepare students for life beyond our walls, to help develop them into informed, active members of society who can confidently make all kinds of decisions. So on this podcast, our discussions will focus on strategies to promote active learning in the classroom and their outcomes, as well as creating and nurturing a culture that enables students to take ownership of their learning by planning next steps and implementing our feedback. Here, we believe that our classrooms are learning laboratories, not just for students, but also for teachers. You'll always get encouragement to keep on experimenting, because what you do and how you do it matters. Let's jump into today's topic. All right, guys, welcome back. I am Lisa. I am all about inspiring you to ditch lecture in favor of leading active classrooms, learning laboratories, I love to call them. And one of the best benefits of that is really getting to have an impact on student lives, like in a way that no other career provides. So some of the ways I lead teachers through that are by careful reflection on their teaching practice, adoption of student-centered science instructional strategies, and preparing, delivering, designing interactive science lessons to get them through the whole thing and make the whole process super duper easy. Now, a little bit of context if you're new here. I am a second career science teacher. I spent about 7 years in the lab before moving into the classroom, and then all those years of teaching have been spent in the cyberspace. But before you shut me off, I want you to recognize that what I'm here to talk about is student-centered learning. Active, action-based, action-oriented learning. So just because I'm in the cyberspace, I ask you to keep your mind open to what is possible. I think it's really impactful, given where I've been, to deliver this message to you. Of course, that wasn't without trials. I did spend 9 years lecturing. And that was really not fun, not for me or for the students. So then I switched to student-centered learning. In about 2018, 2019, I have never turned back. I never, ever will. And that's part of what I'm here to talk to you about, all of the advantages of making that very important switch and how to do that. I do have some membership products. You can join up with me at any point, stay in close touch with me. Maybe you're listening on podcast, maybe you're here with me on YouTube, maybe you're reading my blog, lots of different sources. But one touch point you can get with me daily is in the Student-Centered Science Teacher Society. That's my own personal social media network, if you will. It's our free community, open to everybody, there for inspiration and support. Then I also run the Active Learning Laboratory, which is a $7 a month membership to really focus in on strategy, and the Digital Instructional Design Studio, which is about designing specific, subject matter specific, your expertise required lesson plans that make the whole thing, all those strategies just fall into place. All right, so let's get started with today's topic, knowing every student. Tools and strategies you could use to get to actually know students. And that seems like sort of this really wide open idea, or it seems like so obvious to you. You're kind of in one of those two camps, probably. You're going, that's why I became a teacher, so that I could get in touch with students, and that just comes natural, and that's easy. What's she talking about? And others of you are going, oh my gosh, well, I'm just delivering content every day. How could I possibly get to know my students? It's one of the best benefits of student-centered learning. It is one of the driving forces, I think, that most people would adopt it for. Me personally, just a very short pseudo side story, is that when I became a teacher, I was all about the content, and it was all about me. I just really enjoyed delivering content. I looked at my job as a primary task of transforming the content that made it easier for someone to learn it. And it didn't matter, student or adult, or, you know, child or adult, that I was, because actually I did start teaching adults. I worked for a gas chromatography company, and I traveled the country actually teaching technicians who oftentimes only had a high school diploma, the inner workings of the unit, and why we make some of the changes and protocols that we do, so that they could better understand and appreciate all the things that went into each process they were running each day. But so when I became a teacher, it was a very steep learning curve for me to like tap into the human aspect of teaching. And that might not be the case for all of you, but I've met many of you who are also second career teachers. And I think for us in especially, that might be the case. Even if we decided we needed more social, you know, interaction, we went there for the people aspect of it, it's still not necessarily something that comes super easy. So that's what our topic is today. And I want to start with this really super impactful quote by Dale Carnegie. Now, Dale Carnegie also is all about public speaking and self-confidence and projecting yourself. He's written some very popular books. But his quote says, when dealing with people, remember you're not dealing with creatures of logic, but creatures of emotion. And doesn't that get to the very heart of what I just explained? If you became a teacher because you were like, man, I like doing this, I know my subject matter really well, that tends to put us immediately in that teacher-centered style. And chances are that's where you started if you're not still there now. Me, I'm delivering my content. Me, my lesson plan is what I speak at my students all the time. But it's not all about the facts and figures. This is a human job, and it's a service job. And the variables, you know, as teachers, we're spoken to about instructional data and data-driven decision-making. And the fact is, in my humble opinion, the data is very informative. However, the human data is full of variables. And it's really hard to pinpoint some things. But that's for another topic, another day. What I'm trying to press upon you is that students are not just data. This is not just facts we're delivering. It's not just science skills that we're imparting to them. These are people that you're going to have a lasting impact on. And so how are we going to go about creating and nurturing that really impactful relationship, building trust and respect? In my video last week, as part of this series to maintain and cultivate meaningful relationships in our classrooms, not just with students, but with ourselves and with our content, I didn't, in the opening of that series, talk about serving students. How do we really serve students? And one of the sort of rhetorical questions I asked in that video, in the podcast, in the blog, wherever you get your content, was, what if we open our minds to earning mutual trust and respect instead of demanding it? And this connects to our idea of students are more than things sitting before us. They are people. They have spirits and emotions and all of these extra bodies. So at the time I really focused on consistency and competence, reliability and commitment as features that we can demonstrate through our presentation, how we show up every day with specifically with our lesson plan. And that connects today because we're talking about the human emotion. So I don't want you to forget about that idea that in a student-centered environment, it's all about them, and we are not an authority, we're a mentor, so we have to approach all the things differently, even our relationships with students. So I'm going to suggest today, I'm going to step away from the thing, the logic of the lesson plan, and tap into the emotion, the people that we're delivering that lesson plan to, and understanding that we can achieve a building, a nurturing, a cultivating mutual trust and respect by showing an interest in and our students and acknowledging who they are. This part, I think, is the more natural part for some teachers, especially if you're in a traditional environment. Your students file in each day and they're on their way out, and you talk about the weekend or you saw them at the store. If you're in that type of learning environment where you're in your local school district, maybe you went to their sporting event the night before, right? One thing I so looked forward to in becoming a teacher, this happened when I was about 28, I became a teacher. I really wanted to be part of the graduation planning committee. I wanted to plan and chaperone prom. I wanted to go to all the sporting events of all my students and really like be an active part of that community. You know, they say, man plans, God laughs. So that's sort of how it went for me because I ended up in cyberspace and I don't have any of those opportunities. But we can still connect even at a distance. Even though I don't ever see them. They see me all the time. But we still can do it. And how do we do it? Okay. My suggestion is that we can make a commitment with some of those characteristics that we might connect with and identify trust and respect with. Consistency and sincerity. Make a commitment with sincerity and consistency to what? To interact with them outside the context of our science content. So yeah, the job entails going to school every day, delivering your content, delivering the active learning experience, however it is that you teach, but also tapping into and recognizing that we're all people, we're all humans, and we should share some things about ourselves too. So we can have natural conversations if the environment allows to directly ask our students, what do they like and what do they dislike, especially at the beginning of the year. You know, I would say that this type of knowing every student takes me the better part of a semester to accomplish. And I stress about it, but I stress about a lot of things. So that's probably just a me thing. I make copious notes at the beginning of the year about what students like and they don't like, what they do for fun or for hobbies or for sports. I have this one student who comes to mind and she's an equestrian. She does horse leaping and all the tricky stuff. She travels out of state to do that. A lot of our cyber students are involved in some sort of high level of extracurricular activity. And so she does that. And I knew it. I remembered it. I made a note, but I do remember it. And like a couple weeks or months later, when it comes up, that student's floored that you go, oh, hey, have you done any of your competitions lately? And they're like, say what? Because you remembered? That's so meaningful to them. They become someone in your sphere when you show them that you're committed in that way. Oh my gosh, what do they dream of becoming? I don't think this matters if you're an elementary school teacher or if you're a middle school teacher or if you are a high school teacher. Now, me as a high school teacher, my students are super close to graduation, you know, blink of an eye and they're there. And so we want to be especially mindful to plant those seeds for graduation and what comes next, and constantly ask them, what are their dreams, their aspirations? But unfortunately, I think my students anyway, many of them don't vision them as dreams. They see it much more as pressure and stress and the expectation of society for them to attend college, even though that's probably not their path. But in the elementary and the middle levels, they're really still dreaming, you know, when I grow up, what do I want to be? And really be mindful to try to make as many connections in the activities you do and in different portions of your lesson planning to tap into some of those things, specific or general or otherwise. They notice. They absolutely do. And if you're not watching the YouTube right now, I want to just shout out to those of you listening to the podcast. I have a lot of folks listening to the podcast. The visuals here are, you know, I sweat over my visuals. I want you to know that, you know, the pictures I've chosen are teachers at the student desk. There's plenty of pictures where the students are walking up to the teacher desk. No, that's all wrong. That sends a visual cue of who's in charge, of who's authority, of who's initiating the relationship, the conversation. In this student-centered design, you're the one circulating, you're the one moving about, you're the one purposefully and with intention. Next month, I'm going to share a whole series on intention, tapping into each individual student. And so both of these pictures, we have a man and a woman approaching a student, and they're laughing and they're smiling. You don't get the sense in these pictures that they are talking about content. They're not talking about how to solve a problem or how to think through a system. They're just like, hey, having a good time. What'd you do last night? How'd your gymnastics meet go? And hey, I heard this funny joke. You know, just being human. So important, especially, I'm going to say especially in science because science is so heavy, right? Students come away more often with the, I can't do science and math than any other genre of learning, any other subject matter, I think. And so to lighten the load and just, and it sends that, I believe, I don't know that this is written anywhere, but I believe it sends this message that regardless of how you do in my class, we're cool. Fist bump. We're all right. And you're a person. I don't judge you because you're not getting it. I don't judge you because you're not trying as hard as maybe the others. Because it's that extra moment that we're creating the personal connection that can overcome that. And it's real. Really super short story, because I've already spent way more time here than I want to. In my cooperating experience with my mentor teacher, before I was officially a teacher in Pennsylvania, and I had to do my 3-month in-service, there was a student who was so angry about chemistry. I mean, he didn't act out or anything, but his whole self, his whole body language, his whole everything said, I'm not doing this for you. There was a mentality that he wasn't going to do, and he didn't. He didn't do the homework when the mentor teacher assigned it. He got C's and D's on all the tests. And then I came in and take over for a bit, and I was helping out, and we got talking about things. And at the time, I had a motorcycle, Harley Davidson, actually, vroom vroom. That was my graduation present to myself before I realized I'd be paying student loans until I was 65. And my family did it. It was like a fun thing. And I talked about it. And he was also into motorcycles. I mean, this kid, he turned around. He answered every question that I called on him in class. He paid attention. He smiled. Like, his whole world opened up. Now, in that case, he and I had something in common, or at least he perceived that. But beyond that, I took the time to find out. And we had that personal conversation that revealed it. So there is so much power. And I want you to remember that I don't see my students. They see me. I don't see them. So this is all I got in terms of making relationships, okay? And it doesn't happen in front of everyone in my classrooms. We can do private breakouts on the side. I send them video messages via email, all sorts of ways. But I know most of you listening and watching are not online school teachers, so I'm not going to, and I can spend too much of my strategy talk there. I just want you to know that it's a thing. And that it's real and that it happens. Okay, what do they feel threatened by? You can come right out and ask, what do they feel threatened by? All right, moving on though. Keeping on this idea that we can interact with them outside of our science content, you might be saying, that's awesome. I don't know what you do in science school, online cyber school, but I don't have time for that. How am I supposed to now teach this three-dimensional practice-based lesson and connect with my students? When is this happening? And so here, and this is what I'm always trying to do as often as possible for you and all the content I deliver, is tie it back to the free toolbox of learning resources I have shared with you. And if you haven't got them yet, you can look in the description or in the notes of whatever medium that you are taking this content in as, and get a link to this free toolbox. It contains a lesson plan template and a student activity tracker. And I'm gonna suggest to you that this type of connection can happen at two various points in this lesson plan. This is where it happens for me. Number one, in the warm-up activity. So this is a time when your students are just filing into class, they're just sort of getting settled, some of them faster than others, they're working on an activity, and this is a period of time that you are kind of making your way around the room, physically interacting with your students and letting them know, without speaking, that you are there, you're peeking in on them, you have the opportunity to just touch base here or there. The other thing is, when you're designing your warm-up activity, you can keep your students' interests in mind. Perhaps you're teaching physics and you have my student who is into equestrian work, and you're talking about net forces up and down. She's leaping over hurdles, right? Or a track star or something like that. Tapping into life experiences in the warm-up activity is a super way to accomplish both knowing your student, acknowledging your student, and integrating prior knowledge. And that's the kind of stuff I cover in the Digital Instructional Design Studio. But the other place that you would use in this template that is super fantastic for helping you to tap into students and connect with them is in the actual learning activity, because that's going to take up nearly 50% of your class time. They are going to be actively working. You have the opportunity to purposefully and with intention approach each individual of them. Now, you might be thinking, isn't that going to distract them? Yes, certainly. But you're not going there just to have like a powwow. You might look over their shoulder and recognize that they're a little ahead today. So you take that opportunity to maybe praise them, acknowledge them, and then say, hey, are you doing that thing this weekend? Or, you know, I read this great book. I heard you talking the other day about such and such, and I read this great book. You know, whatever you can connect with them at that time. Okay. We can also be consistent and sincere, making a commitment in that way, to also interact with their artifacts of learning to identify areas of strength and opportunities for growth. So in knowing every student, I tapped into the human part first, but we're trying to be holistic here. We first and foremost truly need to be concerned with their progress, their growth, their starting, their ending point. And as it pertains to these relationships that we have created, or that we have the potential to create, when this was a huge, huge thing for me as well, because when it came time for me to report on individual student feedback, for some reason, details, I like had nothing. They were here or they weren't here. But in a student-centered classroom with an intentional lesson plan design, that they have a ton of accountability and choice in completing, there is a wealth of knowledge that we can gain. So daily, we can monitor their outcomes. And when I'm talking about outcomes, I am talking about in your learning lesson plan design, I teach this in my programs, you want to create an artifact for every single activity that you create. Something, whether you would call it a worksheet or lab notes or web quest, or I mean, whatever you call it, I call it an artifact because sometimes it's a writing task. I mean, it could take all sorts of different forms. You're collecting it every single day. But in addition to collecting it and being able to, at a glance, kind of tell, did they get it, didn't they get it? So mastery or struggle. We can also use the visual cues that they present while they're working. What do I mean by that? You know, is their head in their hand like this? Are they totally stressing out? Are they smiling? Are they, you know, I don't know, looking around the room? You have a lot of ability in and a lot more flexibility there with the visual cues than I do. I have no visual cue at all other than progress. What I have to do is I have to monitor progress, and the thing that I look for the most is speed. The speed with which they complete their activities. And what I have learned in general is that if they are moving very slowly, chances are they are totally lost, if they've been able to start at all. And I primarily use Seesaw as a mechanism for me to see their progress. So I will often ask students to draft for me to see their progress. Some choose not to. That tells me volumes. When I onboard new students, I always explain that even if they haven't written a lot, I still want to see their draft so that I can learn about how they learn and how they make progress. So even something like that is informational to us. That's data. That's an artifact of their learning that we could use to understand their strengths and opportunities for growth. And then also the social emotional skills they demonstrate. When you group them, are they effective in working as a team? Do they communicate? Do they debate? Are they using higher order communication skills, or are they just writing down what everybody else in the group is saying? So that type of interaction is also super informative to us. As a student-centered science teacher, you're like, I can't even pick a specific animal right now. I'm thinking just a hungry carnivore, like out in the Sahara Desert or something. You know, you're like on the prowl. You're like always eyes and ears wide open, looking for the next opportunity. And so a lot of people will say student-centered classrooms are so much easier because like they do all the work. But I would argue no. I would argue if you're doing it effectively, you are spending so much time gathering this kind of information. And so the observations and the information we can infer from all of these behaviors and the artifacts, that the work that they produce, allows us to contribute more meaningfully to any kind of student discussion about a student, IEP meetings, 504 meetings, even simple parent-teacher conferences. You'll know exactly where they struggle in your content. And you'll be able to share that. What I have here, and now this is the advantage of watching the YouTube, but I will articulate it for all those of you listen by podcast. What I have on the screen is bullet points that have recently been introduced by the administration at my school as a guideline for sharing input for IEP meetings. Because I guess a lot of people weren't being very detailed. I'm not surprised, because I used to not be very detailed because I had nothing. I had nothing to say. So of note here is the super duper basics. In my model, is the student synchronous or asynchronous? Must they attend live every day, or do they have permission to work on their own? Explain and describe the student's attendance, engagement, participation level. Are they answering questions? Are they offering to volunteer? Are they doing the classwork? Just are they doing it? And then finally, student grades and work completion. And so instead of course, handing in a paper every day, probably you all who are listening to me, you lived through the pandemic, you did the Zoom school, you know, you had the LMS or some mechanism for students to digitally submit work. That's my life. That's where I live. And so we might look at how many missing assignments there are, or how, you know, things like that. These are all data-based and they're easy. Every student, every teacher should be able to access this data and report on it. But what does it really tell us? What does that tell a parent and an IEP team is starting to and trying to develop accommodations for a student in particular classes with specific classwork. No, for those of you who can appreciate the special ed world a little more, and we have very high enrollment special ed in my school. So if you're out there thinking, hey, how is your special ed caseload? Mine is not super high in chemistry, but it has been reasonably high. Some teachers at my school have like 30-40% special ed students. So I do not carry that degree of caseload, but it's probably like 10-15%. Things that we should be able to report on: that a student-centered lesson plan design, a student-centered instructional approach strategy would help you observe and report. What skills are they demonstrating mastery in? What are they struggling with? What are their, in general, this is super broad, right? Academic strengths and weaknesses, behavioral strengths and weaknesses. And you can get some behavioral strengths and weaknesses just by lecturing, because that student could be off into la la land or doodling the whole time, or, you know, I don't even know, making paper airplanes or spitballs or something. That's what they did when I was in school. Starting to feel like an ancient dinosaur, even though I know I'm not. These two were the things that bothered me the most whenever I contributed to these documents, because I truly felt like I had nothing. And that's not the case anymore. It says, be specific and data-driven in your response. What accommodations do you implement? What does it look like for the student? Now, that's a differentiation move right there, right? For our special ed students, and maybe for any student, but particularly for them. Differentiation of a student-centered activity is a differentiation of product and process. So we don't have to change the content. And so if you're planning super intentionally and you are super clear on your own objectives, the success criteria you want for the student, your students with accommodations can satisfy the same success criteria with a different process or possibly a different product. But those are things you can hone in on there. How do they utilize those accommodations? Are you suggesting any to add, remove, revise, and then any additional? So everything here highlighted in blue, everything I just read to you, can be satisfied by your student-centered lesson plan design. Now, the one piece that I did not read, the only piece I didn't read, on this suggestion from my administration for contribution to IEP information is being sure to include positive feedback. So I'm going to talk on that in just a moment. But first, I want to point out to you again, where in this lesson plan design all of those detailed database things happen? Everywhere. Everywhere, maybe except objectives, in the warm-up, in the main activity, in the data analysis, in the skill practice, you're able to observe various degrees of mastery and struggle. You can hone in specific on those strengths and behaviors during that period of time. It provides you with data once you collect their work and you start to observe patterns. And certainly the differentiation in how you're delivering that activity, especially if you're opting for some student choice in maybe the warm-up, or a differentiated activity, it complements all this. So for a deeper dive, you definitely want to join the Active Learning Laboratory. And for a deep, deep dive, the Digital Instructional Design Studio will teach you so, so much about this. The student activity tracker that I share with you as a free resource, and one that I think every student-centered science teacher can have, is also helpful. Because what you're using this for is not just the preview, but this is during delivery. You're actually able to walk around with your little clipboard and all your students listed on the left-hand side, and for every day, mark their presence or absence, their mastery or struggle. And that doesn't give you all these varying levels, right? But it gives you an opportunity to, over a course of time, observe patterns. And it's really, you know, your science teachers, you know that you need at least 3 points of data before you can start making some conclusions. And so what this does is it produces a visual for you. So on what you might think. You might suspect it's the student, but what you might find is that in one column, there's a whole lot of struggle, which points to maybe redesign your lesson. And so it's in this document that I think when used with consistency and sincerity and really trying to evaluate, a lot of different things can emerge, which are helpful to understanding areas of strengths and opportunities for growth for your whole group and for individual students. Now, I would not suspect or suggest that you try to accomplish this, filling out this document, like during that activity period of time. Some days you won't get till the end. You've collected their work and you click on through. This is how I do it at the end of the day when I'm looking, because I am like too in it to win it during class. So I have to take some really careful, intentional time after class to sort through this. But it's a helpful tool for sure. Now what I want to suggest is that positive piece. That positive piece in the suggestions for IEP feedback that says be sure to include positive feedback. I love, love, love Miss Joyce Meyer. Miss Joyce Meyer is a Christian teacher, evangelist, maybe. I don't know. I listen to her. She's got podcasts, it's TV, all the things. But when I was searching for, you know, because I like to throw in some inspiration here in a real meaningful way, and I wanted to focus in on relationships, and that's all I was after, I found her first. And she says, we can improve our relationships with others by leaps and bounds if we become encouragers instead of critics. Encouragers instead of critics. That means praise in place of punishment. This is so important to growth mindset. Growth mindset is one of the things I believe needs to be at the core of a student-centered instructional strategy / design in a classroom, in a lesson, in a culture. Because science is hard and it's always easier to give up. It's always easier for you to give up on something new you try and me to give up on something new I try, and students, children, to give up on something that they are trying. So praise, 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 praise until you want to throw up because you have praised so much. Until your cheeks hurt from smiling through the praise. Cheeks hurt. Make it a goal. Including positive feedback. When you are doing student-centered science, and this is how maybe it's different for science, from English, from social studies, from math, is that we have a method that we live by, and it's called the scientific method. Now, on social media, I've been lynched once or twice for calling it the scientific method, because I know we have like engineering design, and okay, I didn't even know that people were using other terms besides the scientific method, so maybe I'm primitive. You got me. But it's the core of it all. The skills are the same no matter what we call it. And we need to acknowledge it. That's part of the reason we're science as practice. Why we're going after, you know, we're trying to unearth and uncover core ideas through using this same process that these students will use as adults as they try to make informed decisions about who knows what as they encounter life. And so what I'm going to suggest is that you might use badges or stickers or just little praise tokens. You could call them whatever you want. I like to call them super science stickers, and they are this month's addition to the Active Learning Laboratory. Now, what does that mean? Also, it's February, the love month. So what I try to do every month in the Active Learning Laboratory is add a tool that could be helpful to you in the classroom or just helpful to you in designing, delivering student-centered strategies, but are practical tools. And so this month's edition is the Super Science Stickers. To show love, to show praise upon praise upon praise, encouragement to our students for what we are able to recognize they do well. Some of the science stickers, there are 8, okay? Every single one of them has something to do with professional science discipline, science as a discipline, science process, science practice, scientific method, whatever you want to call it. Here are some of them. We have outstanding observations. It all starts there, right? And some students are really, really good at this. We want to acknowledge that. Quality questions. This is always a point of contention in my classroom. It's like, what came first, the chicken or the egg? Do you make the observation, then ask the question, or do you ask the question, then make the observation? I think it totally depends where your mind is at, right? Because Democritus, he didn't observe anything really. He just kind of said, hey, the world must be made of fundamental particles. He's a philosopher. I mean, I'm not going to call him not a scientist, but he didn't run experiments. He had a question and no observations. But me, I might walk down the street and make an observation that, oh, my neighbors are horrible about leaving their doggy bags and their doggy mess on the side of the road. And I might say, who is doing this? Observation first, question second. Insightful inferences. I might infer that the person walking 100 yards ahead of me left the doggy mess. Of course, that requires a whole bunch of other observations, like, is it still fresh, right? Some students are really good at making inferences, and this pops out at me because at my school, we're really focused on reading and writing and all the Common Core skills, disciplinary literacy kind of context stuff, and inferences are absolutely our weakest area. What I try to impress upon students is that inferences are no different than hypotheses. It's about risk taking, and it's usually happening up there in their head. It just doesn't come out because they think it's part of the logic process, right? But it's a good guess, and it's so worth rewarding that so that it keeps coming. I mean, I feel like I probably will get some bad comments for even suggesting we treat children like animals, but I'm currently training a dog. I'm into the dog training thing. I want to do agility with my puppy someday. But what I'm learning, I mean, from the first class, it's just feed, 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 feed. It's constant positive reinforcement. And I mean, we have much more sophisticated brains, right? Right? I mean, we're supposed to, I guess, but if I reflect on my life day to day, I thrive on positive reinforcement. You tell me I did something good, I really have like a little party inside me. And if you frame that differently, I might cry myself to sleep. I am that person. I don't like to admit it. I'm totally always a work in progress, but it's real. All right, clear communication. You want to step away entirely from the science, what we think of as science skills? Focus on the latter part or the former part of the scientific method. That is the background research and the sharing what you found or the teamwork that's involved. Because every scientist works on a team. No scientist works by himself or herself. It doesn't happen. Yes, we credit Marie Curie with the discovery of radioactivity. Yes, we credit Isaac Newton for gravity and all the things, right? E equals mc squared, Einstein. But they worked in teams. They had people that were helping them get to the root of those problems. And so whether you are the leader of a team or an influential participant in the team matters not at all. You might actually consider adding a leadership badge here. That's not one that I did. Light bulb moment. An eye for evidence. In the age of CER, claim evidence reasoning, a wave of writing technique happening over the U.S. right now. Noting when students correctly identify evidence and making the distinction between evidence and inference or evidence and reasoning is super important. Praise, praise, praise. Awesome analysis. Now, this one you may not give out as much or maybe more. You know, maybe you can even set your own goals to give out so many of these per month, per week, per quarter, in every category. That way you're designing your lessons and using specific strategies to be able to focus on that area. Analysis doesn't come easy. It's something we definitely need to practice. And then finally, and this would be, I would say, our DOK4, if you're into Webb's depth of knowledge or Bloom's highest level there, experimental design domination. By 11th grade, I feel that I should be able to push my science students to design their own experiment, to present them with a question and a resource to find the answer and get them to find the answer, to create a set of steps they will use and their own questions to get to that answer. But I don't think my students are a whole lot different from your students in the regard that generally they can't. I spend 3/4 of the year baby stepping them, modeling for them experimental design so that they can focus on evidence, inference, analysis. And it's barely at the end that I can ensure I'm going to get some, you know, positive results if I let them explore a little bit. And even then, it's going to be my honor students, which I have a tendency to believe my honor students are maybe like somebody else's general chemistry students. I don't really know that though, because they have some great behaviors. Okay. In my membership, there are all of these individual files as images that you can share out digitally, however you do the digital thing. You also get the PDF that you see pictured there where you can print, photocopy, cut them all out. They are not actually stickers, despite the fact they say stickers. That would be awesome for me to make them into stickers and sell them like somewhere, but I don't know. That's a lot of work. I don't know if I could do that. Certainly I can't make a part of the membership right away. But we're talking about knowing students, right? And so giving these out is great, but we really do need a new tracker feature to be able to meaningfully reflect on what we've done and know our students over time. So what I've also provided as part of this edition in the Active Learning Laboratory here in February is a Google Sheet where you can add as many columns as you need. I think what I did in the bottom, I think it's 12 sheets, 12 sheets within the workbook. Okay, each sheet is a month. And I probably gave you enough columns for 30 days, even though we usually only do about 20 days of school here in the US. You know, we don't count weekends. And you can list your students' names, first and last name on the left-hand side, the date you delivered the lesson on the top. So this could be a daily practice. And what the lesson was, that will provide you some context. This is very similar to the student activity tracker in that way. But that's a basic PDF that you're just kind of checking with a pen. This is something that you can keep records over time. And you can see the little rainbow colors. I have a drop down for every scientific skill that you might be praising a student for. Questions, observations, evidence analysis, experimental design, inference, teamwork, and communication. And maybe you find at the end of a month, I mean, you can make this so much fun. You can give out awards at the end of the month. So for the student that best did any of these categories, you can give them a candy bar or some kind of silly little but meaningful prize. Or you can look at it over a semester or over a year. You do like, you know, I don't know if you're into watching The Office reruns, but you know how Michael had the Dundee Awards. You can create your own little award, give out little statues. I mean, how much fun. How much fun that would be. You could get so creative with this. And the fun also enhances your student relationships as well. All right, I hope that I've given you so many fantastic ideas to use in your classroom for knowing your students. It will help you because it will encourage them to come out of their shell. And it will encourage engagement. I'm all about enhance your engagement, increase your rigor, nurture growth mindset. I think all of these strategies are going to do that for you. Next time you meet with me or listen to me or read about me, I'm going to be talking about modeling our love for science. Not so much the students next week, because that's like super important also. I also want to remind you to do more with this. If you are not already a member of the free community, please go there now. community.labineverylesson.com. It is in a platform called Mighty Network. So it is not on Facebook. It is not in any other social network. It is our own private social network. And consider this a formal invite to you. When you get there, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see exactly how you can navigate to my three-step action plan for transforming your science classroom into a learning laboratory. And that three-step action plan is exactly everything you'll find in the Active Learning Laboratory membership, a very nominal $7 investment. I mean, you can't buy a quality resource from Teachers Pay Teachers for that much. But you can meet me there always. And it's not a super lively community yet as I'm recording this video, but I'm hoping that you'll join and help it become lively for sure. Then, if you are watching on YouTube, if you are listening by podcast, if you are on a blog or you're seeing this on a social media somewhere, please like, share, subscribe wherever you are so you stay in touch with us if you are not joined up in the free community there. And honestly, folks, even if you are doing those things in the social media way, spreads the word and it enlightens others. And that's what we want to do here. We want to create a movement. So I thank you very much for tuning in. Thank you for watching or listening or reading. Well, if you're reading, you probably won't be hearing my voice. But anyway, thank you so much. I'll see you back here again soon.